Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family, finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. And now, here's Mary Donnellan on Mom Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mom Talk Radio. This is Mary Donnellan and from Maria Bailey, and it is a pleasure to be behind the mic with you all, and thank you so much for listening. And I wanted to do a quick shout out. We are so appreciative of all the listeners that are out there right now listening. Most of you are hearing me and our guests on a Sunday night. That's the bulk of when the stations are playing our show, I should say. And there's a few of you that are listening on a weekday morning, but wherever you are and whatever you're doing, if you're in the car, if you're in your house, if you're at a vacation house, we hope that you enjoy this next segment, this next hour, rather. We have a great lineup of guests. We're actually talking to quite a few authors today, and we'll have some interesting information about their books and their really interesting topics that directly deal with parenting, your children, self-esteem, resilience, which I love that word. And then we'll actually close out the show with a guest who is a movie producer who is the author of The School for Good and Evil, and it's actually going to be produced by Universal Pictures. So that's how we'll round out the show. We have a great lineup in store for you. And at this, the last week actually has rolled out into the first official month of summer. And as I looked at my Sunday inserts, there was back to school ads. And our producer, Al, over there says he saw a back to school ad on the TV, which I just want to say, wait a minute, it's only 1 month into summer. June 21st was the solstice. Slow down. But back to school is going to be hitting us hard, not only in your inbox, but on TV and in your Sunday circulars. So I hope you have another vacation planned. I personally have a vacation planned next week. I'm going to be diving for lobster off the coast of Florida. So hopefully we get some yummy shellfish. But if you have another vacation planned, I hope it's going to be lovely and sunny and it's a beach or a lake involved. But put that sunscreen on. Don't forget, and put the rash guards or shirts on your kids and yourself and your hats and all that. So as we wrap up this quick intro, I wanted to actually mention our sponsor of the show, which is Pre-Mama. And you know, we're big fans here at Mom Talk Radio of Pre-Mama and their drinkable prenatal vitamins. And Pre-Mama is actually now on CVS shelves. And there's a new product called Fertility and another one, Pre-Mama Lactation. And these are formulas which actually complete the product line for maternity wellness. So Fertility and Lactation, as well as their Essentials and Essentials Plus DHA prenatal vitamins, are now again on shelves at CVS stores. So go to drinkpremama.com, do a quick search for with your zip code or your city and state, and find a CVS store near you. You can also check amazon.com, cvs.com, and again, drinkpremama.com, you'll find stores. But these products are really a great alternative to those awful pills you have to take, especially the prenatal pills when you're feeling nauseous anyway. You basically take one sleeve of the Pre-Mama Essentials or Essentials Plus DHA, and you add it to your favorite cold beverage. Non-carbonated. Don't mix it in your Diet Coke. That doesn't work. So put it in your juice or your smoothie even. That's a great option, or your yogurt or whatever you prefer. And it's a great way to get your vitamins for you and your baby, and includes folic acid, vitamin B for energy and morning sickness relief, gentle iron, which is important, and so much more. And again, the Fertility and the Lactation products, the Fertility is obviously if you're trying to conceive, and Lactation is postpartum breastfeeding. And I think July is National Breastfeeding Month, or there's Breastfeeding Week coming up. I should have looked it up. I apologize. But it's so important to keep your energy and your nutrients up when you're nursing. So check it out, Drink Pre-Mama, and also look on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Drink Pre-Mama. And when we come back, we are going to be joined by our first guest, Kelly Ann, who is a teacher on the west central coast of Florida. And she is actually an author, has written 3 books, and it's all about fostering self-esteem in our little ones. Stay tuned.
Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio.
This is Mary in for Maria, and I'm pleased to introduce our first guest, Kelly Ann Galletti. Kelly is a teacher for the Pasco County School District in West Central Florida. I think I said the coast on the prior to the break. I apologize. West Central Florida, which is actually pretty much a few counties over, and she is certified as a K through 6 teacher, has an MA in elementary education, and more importantly, is an author of books that teach self-esteem to children 4 through 8. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Kellyanne.
Thank you.
As a teacher, how long have you been a teacher?
About 8 years.
So you wrote these books, was it before you were a teacher, became a teacher, or after, when you were in the classroom and had experience with this age group? What was your motivation for writing your books?
Well, I've actually written these books within the last 3 years.
Oh, okay.
Kind of in the middle of teaching. My first book actually was written when I was in eighth grade. And then when I was in college studying to be a teacher, we had to write a book that they used to require it to be publishable, but they no longer had that. But anyway, I wrote it. I embellished the Green Tom to what it is today, and they thought I should publish it. And I was like, yeah. About 10 years later, then I decided to go ahead with it.
That's great. Well, congratulations. So your titles include The Green Tom, which you just mentioned, The Yellow Sea Lioness, and The Orange Chihuahua, which sounds really cute. So what overall do the books have a common theme? Is it a series, or are they individual, they standalone books?
They can be standalone, but it could be part of a series. They all have the same common theme of, it's okay to be yourself. The Green Tom investigates that through... or investigates jealousy and showing people.
Oh,
that,
gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't, no need to be jealous. The Yellow Sea Lioness tells people basically not to judge yourself by the talents of others. And then the Orange Chihuahua tells you again, be your true self. Don't try to be someone else, because keeping that facade gets difficult.
Right. So you talk a lot about within the themes of the book, and your own passion is fostering self-esteem among children in kindergarten. How do parents do that?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I was going to answer that on a teacher's perspective.
Oh, sure. No problem.
Sure. My first year of teaching was actually in kindergarten. And, at kindergarten, they need to know the social graces in life, how to share space, how to share materials. They need to know routines, like, how to stay in line, how to line up for lunch, how to behave during a fire drill. How to throw the garbage out during lunchtime, that sort of thing. Giving them the classroom jobs, the kids eat those up. They
right.
love that. But
right.
yeah, teaching them responsibility, giving them praise for doing, the job well done, and just teaching them the social graces is going to make them more successful in first
Absolutely.
Grade and beyond.
Absolutely. One of my favorite things is a poster I'd seen. It's pretty old, but it's basically, the title is Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten.
Yes.
And it's exactly what you said. It's a big poster, and I want to buy it for my teenagers, because they seem to forget a lot of the social graces. But
yeah,
I feel like bullying is a big topic, obviously. Do you see that lessening, increasing, about the same? How do kids handle it with social media? Because they were talking about cyberbullying. What do you see as a teacher with that perspective?
Right. Yeah, the school that I'm in right now, I've been in for just a year, and I saw no bullying whatsoever. So I got together with the guidance counselor. I said, what is it? What's the trick here?
Right.
Never heard of any fights. Never heard teachers complain about, Johnny or Susie tearing someone's hair out or anything like that. And I had been in other schools where, bullying was definitely prevalent.
Right.
And I'm sorry, how were you asking this question? I want to direct it to your angle that you were getting to.
Oh, well, just how do you see, so you don't see bullying in the school you're in now, so had you seen it before, and is it different in 2015 than in previous years?
Oh, okay, that's where you're going, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Yeah, definitely. I know in some of the other schools when I was doing like intermediate grades, the kids had cell phones.
Right.
You know, and that was like their fifth appendage.
Right.
And, you know, if they could get a cell phone by, you know, a teacher, you know, in between during activities, I mean, it was just there in their pockets, in their book bags, wherever. And the same thing at home. And I think what the difference is, you know, cyberbullying becomes pervasive because of that constant connection.
Right.
When I was a kid, you were lucky if you had just one phone in the house. If you had two, that was even better because that would curb the bullying really well. Because one, if you were the one receiving the call, mom or some adult or something was around, they could kind of hear how you were processing whatever
right.
call you received.
Right.
The bully might be afraid to make a phone call for fear of someone else eavesdropping on another phone.
Right.
The cell phone cuts that all to pieces. So I think that's where the difference is, you know, the parents or a responsible adult can hear what's going on.
There's parental control, at least, at some point.
Yeah.
An interaction if there ever needed to be.
Exactly.
Thank you. Yeah. So are your books available for sale now? Or are they particularly just to the education community or?
Oh, no. You can get them from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or my publisher, Author House.
Great. And you have a website, Kelly Ann Galletti, and it's GUGLIETTI, and that's kelly-ann-galletti.com, correct?
Exactly. And there'll be icons on that website where they could order from wherever they want.
Right. And so enjoy your summer. I'm assuming you're going back to school in about 6 weeks or so?
Yeah. August 20th I start.
Okay, so we start the 24th on the east coast of Florida. So enjoy the summer. Thank you so much, Kellyanne. Good luck with your books and the best. And there any more books coming out in the future?
I hope so.
Good. Yeah, we'll look forward to them. We'll have your link up on momtalkradio.com. Thank you so much for joining us. And when we return, we'll shine the spotlight on moms with Deanna Novak, a mom of two, who talks about children and their heritage. We'll be right back. The Spotlight on Moms, and I'm pleased to introduce Deanna Novak, the mom of two children. She tweets at Kids Heritage Inc., and she is the author of personalized children's books. And the first book was called My Heritage Book, but I'll let you hear it from her. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Deanna.
Hi, Mary. Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be included. And yes,
Thank you.
Create books based on heritage and world culture, but where it all began was with my heritage book and a way to incorporate up to 8 different countries based on the child's specific heritage into one really special keepsake for them. It also includes their name, the gift giver's name, and a family tree to get them started on their own heritage exploration at a young age.
That's
Absolutely.
Wonderful. So we talk about heritage and world culture. And
yes.
What inspired you to come up with this heritage book line?
Well, of course, motherhood.
Yes.
Well, first of all, family has always been very important to me, as it is for most of us. Some of my fondest memories growing up have to do with my family and my Italian heritage. And when my little girl was born, I felt this incredible need for her to learn about that so she has those same experiences. At the same time, I realized she wasn't just 100% Italian like I was, but also Polish and Czech from her dad.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I said, all right, how do we incorporate both? You know, there's two sides. His parents and he had different traditions than we did, and I wanted her to be able to experience and be proud of both of them. After searching for a book that would include those three countries and a lot of crazy looks in my direction, I decided to make it myself. And that's really how we got started, and that was about 10 years ago.
You created the first one and then obviously came up with the idea. Is it online you can do it, or is it stores?
Yes.
How do you basically buy the personalized children's book? And who's your best customer in terms of a family member?
Right. They are online. Our website is myheritagebook.com, where you can mm-hmm. view samples, actually flip the pages, and you can, of course, purchase, and then we ship them out to you. We are in a few select retail locations. Most recently in Disney World. We actually have a retail location in Epcot's World Showcase at the American Adventure where we create
fantastic.
The book, thank you, right on property in about 30 minutes for Disney guests. So it's a really cool process. The kids love it. They get engaged in helping to make their book, and then they go for a bite to eat and come back, and it's all
right.
ready for them. Mm-hmm. So that's really fun. Who loves the books? Grandparents, obviously. Genealogists. Anyone who has that interest in exploring their own heritage is looking for a way to introduce children to that concept as well. But we want to make it fun for them, and I think that's what my goal is with the book. And teachers. We do them a lot for teachers as well. Heritage has become a big part of a lot of curriculums, as well as mm-hmm. introducing children to world geography. So our books are made a lot for teachers. But it's really been fun to see all the different ways people have used it. We have done them for grandparent gifts from the grandchildren. We've done them as wedding gifts. We've done them for teachers. We've done them for adoption gifts where we can combine, especially in an international adoption situation where they can combine mm-hmm. the country of adoption as well as their own heritage. So this way it's not a matter of you're from there and we're from here. It's this is our new family's heritage, and it's a wonderful way to combine it all for them.
The Epcot tie-in is actually perfect fit for you.
It is. It's so fun. And literally, you know, when I signed, when they invited me to be there, I said, you know, you guys really mean it when you say dreams come true, because I always felt, you know, such a strong connection with Disney, especially the World Showcase or, you know, their focus on family and traditions and values. And I just thought it was always such a great fit, but you know, I was working from my little home office in South Florida, and it happened, and we've been here. We've been open in Epcot for 2.5 years.
Okay, that was my next question. You've been open for 2.5 years, and going strong, I'm assuming.
Yes, we actually launched also on Disney Cruise Line last year, which was a lot of fun. We made the printed and bound on the sea, so we were making books right on board the Fantasy last December. Which was a wonderful experience, you know, for the guests and for myself, quite frankly. It's so fun for me.
I was going to say, I hope you got a Disney cruise out of that.
We worked a lot, actually, you know.
Yeah, yeah, vacation, yeah.
It was, but it was fun to be able to offer that experience to those passengers and really anyone in general. We've been doing a lot with genealogical conferences and homeschoolers, so a lot of different ways to get the books out. My other books are more of an around-the-world feel. We do an ABCs around the world, really, really popular with teachers, and I love the fact that they're using them in their classrooms. They personalize them with the teacher's picture and their name in it, so it engages their students even more because they just think that's so cool.
Right. That's awesome. It's myheritagebook.com. Okay. And we'll have a link up to that on Montauk Radio. And again, you tweet at Kids Heritage Inc. And enjoy your summer. Congratulations on a really successful book series and really well thought out idea. So next time I'm at Epcot, I'll come see you. So thank you so much, Deanna Novak. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Aubrey Fine, a child psychologist, and we'll talk about resilience.
Succeed at the most important career you'll ever have. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey.
This is Marion for Maria. Welcome back to this segment of Mom Talk Radio. We're talking to another author, Dr. Aubrey H. Fine. He's a child psychologist and a professor at Cal State Polytechnic University in Pomona. I hope I got that right. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Dr. Fine.
Thanks so much for having me.
I love this topic. It's resilience. Tell us a little bit about your definition of resilience, is you're obviously very, very well educated on the topic, and how we as parents foster it in our children.
I could talk to you as a psychologist, but I'd really like to talk as a dad, because
I've got
two boys, and the important part to this is we all want to see our children be successful in life, and resilience. The simple way that I look at resilience is being able to bounce back, being able to weather storms.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how do we help our children feel good about the things that happen in their lives, but how do we really help prepare them so that they're inoculated and are capable of bouncing back, and becoming more resilient as in difficult times, not only in good times.
We were just talking to a previous guest to something too about social media and how it's just created such a different world that our kids live in. I'm not sure how old your children are, but I have 8 to 15 year olds. I think it makes a big difference. And even that, what you're talking about, that resilience in even handling that kind of just even cyberbullying or, you know, stuff on social media. And like my daughter, she's, her friends went to the mall and she sees the picture on Instagram. Drives me crazy, like little stuff like that, and then big stuff, right?
Bringing up children today is a bit different, perhaps, than it was,
yes,
you know, 50, 60 years ago. But the reality is...
Even 10 or 15, I think, don't you?
Right. No, it is. But I think, you know, there are a lot of issues that perhaps can impact the way children cope with daily life. But the ingredients that we can help as parents to let our children know that they're competent and capable, and things that we can help them learn to develop to help them become more capable of the challenges in daily life. And one of the things that we did in our book called The Parent-Child Dance, in the chapter where we talk about resilience, is Ron and I, Ron Kotkin, who is a professor at UCI or professor emeritus, develop what we call the backpack of resilience. You know, what could parents put into a child's backpack that would help them sort of weather storms? And we developed an acronym called the Archers, Archers representing different things. You know, how do we help children with recognizing the attitude that they have and the way they communicate not only to others, but the way they use internal dialogue can help them cope. But there are lots of other ingredients, like, you know, how do we teach our children to be responsible for their actions and recognize that that effort and risk-taking are important elements.
Right. You said you were talking about the magic ingredients. Do you have two or three more top ones
sure.
that you really felt like were important?
Some of the ones that we had in, you know, how do we promote a home that demonstrates happiness, and how do we help kids develop that sense of humor and to be able to look at themselves and say, I like me. I love asking kids, and when my kids were younger, who's your best friend? And I know this sounds cliche-ish, but mm-hmm. we have to help children recognize that their best friend needs to be themselves. You know, mm-hmm. you need to like who you are. You need to be able to fill your bucket, because if you don't fill your own bucket, other people might drill holes in it, and you will have a harder time recognizing that I am an important person. You know, in the years I worked with my, you know, with children and bringing up my own youngsters, how do I have to teach children that they need to recognize that they have to see themselves as being, I'm capable of doing things, and recognizing that sometimes you don't always have to be the best, but you have to feel like you've put in your best effort. Because, you know, we've done some research that looks at effort. I've done this with athletes. I've done it with children in school, that in some ways it isn't always the skills that you have, but how much you try and the attitude that you have about that
Absolutely.
Effort that
Yep.
makes you more successful.
Right. So when you talk about the backpack of resilience, does it change as, obviously, you know, as children age? Do the ingredients change?
In the book, The Parent-Child Dance, we talk about, you know, the lifespan of childhood. And in reality, even as parents, the way we interact with our youngsters mm-hmm. changes over time.
Absolutely.
And so it does change. You know, you give children a longer, if I use the word, a cord or rope, that they can have more independence. Because when we're teaching children, you're responsible for your day. You know, probably, you know, I've always loved this metaphor, the greatest gift to give children is strong roots and wings to fly. And what
great.
Ends up happening as children become more capable and become a bit older, what occurs is that they, in fact, need to become more accountable and responsible for the things that they do to become more successful. So, yes, there are things that with older children, for example, teaching children more sophisticated levels of self-talk, but even showing them how destructive self-talk impacts your ability to cope. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? That you have to be able to use that language, and how can we listen to our children? Because, you know, the thing that I learned a long time ago as a parent is that sometimes when children share with you their dismay and frustration, you know, some of the times we may just sort of gloss over it and not acknowledge how a child is feeling. Listening as a parent is an important ingredient to let the children know that we're taking into account what they're thinking, and then we need to help teach them ways to problem solve. Just giving right. them answers and solutions and patting them on the back doesn't make a difference. It's, you know, I've seen children, the whole world can say that they're wonderful, but if they themselves can't acknowledge that I'm an okay person and I'm a capable person, then of course it doesn't really matter.
It's lost on them. Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
Where can our listeners find more information about the topic, resilience in general, the backpack of resilience, and as well as your books?
The Parent-Child Dance was published recently by Skyhorse Publishing.
Okay.
You can go to Skyhorse Publishing, or you can go to aubreyhfine.com, which is my website, and mm-hmm. on there, many of the other books that I've written on sports and children. I have a book on fathers, and then I have several books on the role that animals have in our lives.
You could be come back on. That's a whole other segment. You should be on again about the importance of animals. So thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Fine, and that's aubreyhfine.com. It's aubreyhfine.com. And when we come back on Mom Talk Radio, we'll talk to Rabbi Stephen Fizdell about meditation for youth.
Number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
In this crazy world, it's sometimes good to meditate. And I know most of us as parents feel like we could take a few minutes every day and meditate. I know I try to. But is meditation good for young people? We're talking to Rabbi Stephen A. Fizdell, who has studied and lectured on the spiritual significance of the Kabbalah, Dead Sea Scrolls, early Jewish mysticism, holds a master's degree in Judaica from Spertus College, bachelor's, etc. Very well educated and very excellent authority on this topic. Welcome to the show, Rabbi Fizdell.
Thank you.
Let's talk about it. Meditation for young people. Again, I think it's important for adults, but I sometimes don't think of it for my kids. Can it be taught effectively to young people, and how do we do that?
It absolutely can. The key to teaching it to young people is simply putting it, translating it into terms that they understand and keying it to where a child is developmentally. My real sense is that the key to teaching meditation to children is modeling it. If a parent meditates themselves, mm-hmm. or if meditation is something that becomes a function of family interaction or things like that, it becomes a normal part of life, and it's modeled carefully, that's the most effective way to get it through both to children and also to young people.
Absolutely. So how important is it as a practice for youth, and what are the effects of it, let's say, short-term and long-term of meditation?
Well, I would say the most important thing to remember about childhood, adolescence, even one's early adult years, is that a person is developing a sense of who they actually are, what their role in life is, what their purpose is, what their identity is, how they're going to function. And meditation goes a long way in furthering that, both on a long-term and a short-term basis. I think one of the most important functions on the shorter-term basis is if you teach child meditation or meditative practices, it keeps them in touch with their intuitive selves.
Mm-hmm.
That all of us are born as children with a very strong intuitive sense, which I feel is very, very much related to the spiritual plane. And if you teach meditation to children and they learn it at a relatively early age and continue the practice, they not only remain connected to who they are intuitively, mm-hmm. and to sort of their higher self, but it also develops and strengthens over time. I think the longer term effect, you know, for children, is that it gets them in touch with themselves, their inner reality, and they become accustomed to defining themselves based on who they feel they are, what they understand about themselves, how they're they're interacting with the world rather than accepting an identity or a definition that's being imposed by what the outside world is telling them.
Right. So something that's being put on them by somebody else's views or experiences. When you talk about even starting out for, let's say, my teenage daughter, she's 13. What are the practical steps? Because as I said in the intro, I try to meditate. I don't always. And you're right. You could lead by example as the parent. But what do we do? Do we set aside a part of the house, a part of their room? What does it take to set up a successful meditation practice within a household, let's say?
I would say several factors. The first and most important is actually intention. That you mm-hmm. set the intention that this is very important to do on an everyday basis, because this is how I get in touch. This is how we get in touch with ourselves. This mm-hmm. is how we bring ourselves to a point of balance, and that sort of thing. But there are a lot of external things you can do to facilitate it. What I usually do is I often tell people that they should set aside a certain area and a certain time of the day specifically to do meditation.
Mm-hmm.
It helps to do meditation at a period of time when there's not going to be outside distractions.
We make them hang up their phones, turn their phones off.
Yeah. Also to do it during a time of day that is not likely to have distractions.
Right.
In a lot of mystic traditions or meditative traditions, they always advocated doing meditation at night. Sometimes what's most effective is to do meditation an hour, a half hour or so before you go to sleep.
Right.
The nighttime is particularly useful because at 9 o'clock at night or at 9:30 at night or something like that, there's much less likelihood that distractions are going to show up than would be the case if you tried to do this at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right. And plus, I think it's more calming with in not a lot of light and just quieter at night anyway. Yeah, is it the Kabbalist meditation? Is that what you practice?
Yeah, that's what I do, yes. That's what I write about. Kabbalist meditation is basically based on traditional Jewish mystic tradition, and its focus is largely to connect the person to their own inner processes and also their relationship to God and to higher consciousness.
So your website mm-hmm. is classicalkabbalist.org, classical, the word, and then KABBALIST.org. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can we learn about meditation for everybody, or is it just youth-oriented meditation you talk about there? What can our listeners find at the website?
No, my work is basically on meditation per se. I wrote the book specifically, actually, for adults. So the most practical way to use my book, if you want to go that route, is to consider it like as a teacher's guide. The parent is learning it themselves, and then they can pass it on to their children or adapt it to their children's needs.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Stephen Fizdell. And again, the website is classicalkabbalist.org. And when we return, we're joined by Soman Chaneni, who is the author of The School for Good and Evil, soon to be made into a motion picture. We'll be right back. To round out this edition of Mom Talk Radio, I'm pleased to speak with Soman Chaneni, the author of The School for Good and Evil, that is soon to be a motion picture produced by Universal Pictures. And it's interesting because in a lot of the parenting and mom world, the Disney prototype of a movie has, the evil stepmother or, no two-parent families, et cetera. So I think your book and this upcoming movie is going to turn that on its head, correct?
Totally. I mean, I think, I grew up on Disney movies and seeing all the holes in them. And so all I really wanted to do when I wrote my own series was to kind of, respond to all that. And so I'd sort of been waiting a long time and finally got my chance.
Wonderful. So your resume is quite impressive. You hold a degree from Harvard and from MFA film directing program at Columbia. So what was the impetus behind, or the inspiration actually, to write the book?
I think it was that I felt like the original stories, the Grimm stories and the fairy tales from the 1800s and before that, had such richness and complexity and dark edges. And we had scrubbed all those out in the face of, you know, selling toys and dolls and entertainment. And because of that, we'd lost the point of the stories, to the point that some Disney stories I actually find quite immoral or anti-feminist and things like that. And I felt like that was just done, you know, purely out of a capitalist, you know, directive. And so with School for Geneva, I wanted to get back to the original point of a fairy story, which is to provide kind of a survival guide to life and sort of bridge the gap between childhood and adulthood.
Okay. So tell us a little bit then the background about the book.
Well, it's about these two girls who are best friends and complete opposites. One dreams of being a princess in sort of Disney style and wants a rich prince and to live in a castle and all those things. And her friend is kind of a death-obsessed goth girl who can't see any reason to ever, you know, believe in true love or anything like that. And
right.
The two of them, get kidnapped to the School for Geneva and they're switched into the wrong schools. And you end up with the princess in the villain school and, you know, the witch in the hero school. And the question is why this switch happens. What does it mean for their friendship? You know, how does it affect them moving forward? And it's just sort of a big kind of epic about what fate really means, what love really means, what friendship really means. It's just a big, big story.
What a great idea. I mean, what a concept.
So,
your films have played at more than 150 film festivals around the world. Is this film based on your book, The School for Good and Evil? Is this the biggest one you've done, your favorite? What makes this one, get scooped up by Universal?
This one, I think, is definitely the biggest scale one, to the point of there's no way I can direct this one because it would take like 3 years of my life, I think.
Right.
So I wrote the script and then we'll happily step off for someone else to direct it. But I think it's the biggest one. So there's this kind of huge, sort of momentum behind it and the studio behind it and all those things. But it's going to be an interesting ride because at the end of the day, I can't control the movie the way I normally would. So we'll see what ends up happening, you know, but I'm just happy it's getting made and we'll see what happens from there.
Well, congratulations. That's quite an accomplishment. Can you give us, without divulging too much information, can you give us any hints on when the picture's going to start filming or if it's already started?
When is it? Starts filming next May in London and then it'll come out, I think it's dated for Christmas 2017.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's seems like so far out, but it really isn't. And I think as a film director,
quite soon.
as a film director, you know what it takes, right?
Oh yeah. That's quite soon for a movie.
Right. So where can our listeners go to find more information on the book? I'd love to buy the book for my teenage daughter. I think she'd love it. And as well as more information about the movie.
SchoolForGeneva.com is kind of a huge site dedicated to everything about, you know, the site. We have over 8,000 pieces of fan art. There's a million people who've taken this Are You Good or Evil quiz. You know, there's online forums, all sorts of stuff. And you can order the books there on the homepage if you want, like, easy access to all the online retailers. But it's definitely at every bookstore in the country right now. So you can pick it up anywhere. But I know, like Amazon, for instance, it sells for $18 normally, but Amazon is selling it now for $9.50.
So there's a good versus evil quiz?
Yeah, on schoolforgoodandevil.com, it'll tell you whether we call them evers and nevers in our world. So it'll tell you where you belong.
That's great, ever versus never. And which are you?
Definitely a never. I've taken it so many times. The questions change every time you take it. And I always end up in the never camp. Not
the never category. Now I'm intrigued. I got to go figure out whether I'm ever or never. And so thank you so much for joining us. And best of luck. Congratulations on a successful book and an even more successful film. And sure it will be. And again, that's schoolforgoodandevil.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Soman Chanani. And thank you so much again for listening to another great episode of Mom Talk Radio. You can find the links to all of our guests' websites at MomTalkRadio.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Mom Talk Radio. Have a fabulous week.